not speak, Craig.
Holy.
Okay.
Look at all these machines going.
Okay. Needles. One channel wrong there.
You're blasting on that one.
Okay. Yeah, we're good. Okay. Anyway, all right. Check.
Check the mini disc and make sure
we're
okay.
Yeah, I already checked the mini disc. Okay. We're fine. Okay, so...
Here, I got my last cough out of the way.
So, and part of it, well, our levels are going to be a bit uneven, but... But anyway, yeah, so I mean, you know, we can sort of keep going through, and, you know, if at any time you want to go back to something we were talking about earlier because you just thought of something, then just, you know, feel free to sort of interrupt and go back to it and say whatever you wanted to, because we can totally cut the whole thing together afterwards.
And put it back the way you want it to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. No, so, you know, and we want to make sure that we get as many points out as possible, and doesn't really matter how totally incoherent it sounds in raw footage, because, I mean, I'll probably do the same thing if I'm, like, you know, in the process of asking a question, if I forget to, you know, mention some really patronizing, disgusting fact about heterosexuals, I may go back and mention it again, so.
All right.
Anyway. Okay. So,
well,
I mean.
Some of them I've got stuff prepared for, and some of them I'm still sort of not sure what to,
what to say. But no, the first thing that we wanted to talk about is the whole issue of what percentage of the population heterosexuals make up, because of course there's studies out there that show that it's as high as 98% of the population, and then there's other studies like the Kinsey study, which was very reputable, which show that it's as low as 90% of the population, and of course heterosexuals always want us to believe that it's the higher number. But, you know, we're just wondering, is there any proof positive way of determining what the percentage is of heterosexuals in the population, or will we ever know?
Unfortunately, probably not, because everyone always fills out those questionnaires the way that they think that they should be filled out. heterosexuality isn't normal, it's just common. But all that we can figure out from that, you started at the end of the questions too, and we're supposed to be starting at the beginning.
Oh, I'm sorry. I rearranged them, you know.
That's all right.
But
that was one of the ones I didn't really have anything specifically to say for.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, you know, there's all the normal stuff about, you know, people are inclined to, you know, how do you define heterosexuality and all that.
I can give you some wonderfully khaki quotes and stuff.
Oh, sure.
That.
Sure.
Do you want one of those?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Ingram states that claims that XX is female and XY is male are just that, scientific claims about the natural world, authorized by the ruling order and processed through organizing structures which assign meanings based on frames of intelligibility, based on frames of intelligibility already circulating in the culture at large. And there's a good scientific quote for you.
So what about, do we know how heterosexuals become heterosexual? Because, you know, heterosexuals are always trying to say that, you know, they can't become homosexual even if they wanted to, and most of them are saying that they don't want to become a homosexual. But at the same time, you know, there's studies like that. I think there was a twin study or something which indicates that, in fact, heterosexuality is not inborn. And, you know, in fact, it could be a choice for all we know. So, I mean, do we know what causes heterosexuality? Is it to do with the family upbringing? Is it sexual abuse related? Any thoughts on that?
You're skipping around me again. Press pause on tape.
Oh, we don't have to. We have lots of tape.
You're skipping around to me again.
I'm sorry. Well, do you want to give me the order in which you would like me to ask the questions?
No, it's not really going to matter. So I'm going to have to wing this anyway. So.
Okay.
One more time. You were going on about what causes again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The essential question was, how do heterosexuals become heterosexual?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, do we know for a fact that they were in fact born that way?
It's taught in schools. As you're probably aware, heterosexuals are not always the sharpest knives in the drawer. Witness the creation of the Inquisition, DDT, the atom bomb, fascism, Viagra, as opposed to literature, theater, dance, music, painting, and coordinated leisure wear. Children are denied access to queer history and queer accomplishments, perpetuating the myth that no queers have ever contributed to what is a very rich and vibrant history. Heterosexuality is always in the act of elaborating itself. Its evidence is perpetually at risk, that it knows its own possibility of being undone, as Butler would say. Many homosexual people in their adolescence entertain sexual thoughts of people of the opposite sex, and having these thoughts can confuse the strong emotional feelings they may have of friendship, admiration, and respect of another person. Hollywood movies invariably present heterosexuality as being the ideal, even though the couple that eventually falls in love at the end fights all the way through the film.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying then that, you know, a lot of kids grow up and maybe are confused about their feelings because, you know, they, as you say, they admire somebody of the opposite sex, for example, and because of all this heterosexual propaganda around them are, you know, sort of convinced to believe that they are in fact heterosexual when really they're gay?
I think you've hit on a key concept, Heather. Heterosexuality is a kind of mass confusion. Sorry, what was the second part of your question?
Well, no, I just said, you know, you've got, is it that you know, you get kids who go into, you know, high school, for example. Adolescence is a very, very, you know, confusing time for some kids, and they find themselves, as you say, admiring a member of the opposite sex. And because of all the heterosexual propaganda, the movies, the TV shows, the dominance in the classroom, find themselves mistaking that for heterosexuality when, in fact, they're really gay.
Yes, definitely. Not quite the answer you want.
Sort of leading off, we'll lead on to the next point here. One of the ones I saw here is that there's this perpetual myth out there that suggests that heterosexuals are happy, and I guess
heterosexuals would have us believe that they're happy.
They're happy, and we see so many problems in the heterosexual lifestyle to some extent, and
the drugs, the spousal abuse, the abuse of children, and this kind of thing.
Yes,
the suicide and the murder. I mean, the murder is incredible.
I was going to say
violence.
The proliferation.
Proliferation.
That's right. Of straight bars that are around town where heterosexuals make frequent contacts. You know, can they really be happy?
Well, I think that that as you point out, the proliferation of straight bars suggests that they're not happy, and drug and alcohol abuse amongst heterosexuals indicates the same thing. Where to go from here? This is not easy. And of course, you know, violence within opposite sex relationships. Get that one right. Mm-hmm. Violence within opposite sex relationships is also a horrific social problem of our current day and age.
Mm-hmm. Well, could this be attributed to the power imbalance that exists when men and women get together and attempt to form relationships? I mean, you know, when you've got two women together or two men together, you have an equal sharing of power. You have two people who intimately understand each other sexually, who have the same methods of communication. I mean, we've got study upon study out there that shows that women and men have very distinctly different ways of communicating. And, you know, how are they supposed to form a loving relationship if they don't know how to speak to each other? And is that perhaps why this violence proliferates in heterosexual relationships?
Undoubtedly. The power imbalance in a heterosexual relationship almost always favors the man, leaving the woman at much higher risk. All we have to do is look at the animal kingdom itself, and we see many examples of same-sex social interactions that are nonviolent. The bonobo chimpanzee, for example, or Pan Paniscus, as opposed to the common chimpanzee or the pan troglodytes. The trogs tend to use violence to maintain cohesion in groups. Bonobos, however, use sex. Male-female sex, female-female sex, male-male sex, oral genital sex. Literally, they make love, not war, and they do not have violence within their social structure. Mm-hmm. So I think definitely there's something to be said for homosexual for same-sex relationships as being less violent.
Mm-hmm. What about the whole... Well, let me think. Where am I going with this?
I don't know, because I have no idea where we are anymore.
We're just making it up as we go along.
I'm a writer. I write things down first.
Oh, just wing it with us. But for example, you know, what do we know about you know, the success of heterosexuals at being able to sustain long-term fulfilling relationships? Because, you know, we've got a society which actually we have a society that actually bestows special privileges on heterosexuals as an incentive to commit to live together in this institution called marriage. I mean, all they have to do is make this one commitment, sign a piece of paper, and they get over 200 extra rights that the rest of society doesn't, that lesbian and gay families don't have, that bisexual, transgender, single parent families don't have. Yet even those couples that make this commitment to each other break up 50% of the time. So are we to draw from this that perhaps heterosexuals are genetically predisposed to live in unstable relationships, or are heterosexuals in any way predisposed to instability?
Again, and I would, you know, look at examples in the animal kingdom as well, the bonobo chimpanzees, for example. But I think you're quite right. They do not seem to be capable of forming lasting relationships. It's a familial form that seems, you know, to be falteringly frail. It requires a very limited and restricted definition of the word marriage as opposite sex couple in order to maintain some sort of image that, you know, they can indeed make it last. And it's quite amazing that they can't achieve that one simple task within a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, can I make a suggestion, Quentin?
Mm-hmm.
You want to try coming at this from a different angle?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking it might be easier for you if we did this in such a way where instead of trying to validate my opinion, mm-hmm. which is all too fun and tempting to do, you sort of, because you know how when you, sometimes when we watch like queer programs, they'll be like, you know, the really bigoted host going like, you know,
yeah.
Well, aren't gay people like genetically unstable or whatever? And then like the sociologist will go, well, you know, there's no studies that have conclusively shown that, blah,
okay,
blah,
and
blah.
Defend it.
Well, yeah, just kind of like, you know, always come back to the individuality of people and
okay.
You know, like, you know, of course, there's always going to be, like, you know, the bad person in every group and blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's
so,
give that a try.
Okay. Let's just give it
in
a
the
try.
Meantime,
I mean,
my temperature's just hit 180.
Mm-hmm. What?
I said, in the meantime, my temperature's just hit 180, but...
What's your temperature?
Oh, just... nervousness.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God, don't be nervous. This is funny. I'm enjoying this.
Well, hopefully it will be when you're done with it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll save a copy of the tape for you and let you listen to it.
But, yeah, no, I mean, it might be easier because, I mean, we all know this is bullshit, so it's kind of hard to, it's a lot easier to probably use your real background.
Yeah.
Than to sort of try and make something up, although I really want to use the animal kingdom as well, that's really good. But anyway, and yeah, and if we talk about, you know, population percentages, then, you know, maybe you can talk about how hard it is to, you know, monitor or how hard it is to determine population percentages
mm-hmm.
because, you know, how do we know, you know, how do you define what a heterosexual is? Is a heterosexual somebody who has, you know, ever had sex with a member of the opposite sex? Or is it somebody who, you know, is sexually fulfilled by that? Or is it somebody who's done it in the last year?
Yeah.
You know,
stick to the real ones.
Yeah. Are there people who are, you know, who say they are heterosexual because of the societal propaganda and pressure to do so, you know.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk about the percentages then, because, you know, there's so many different scientific studies out there that show heterosexuals making up anywhere between 90% of the population and 98% of the population. Heterosexuals, of course, always want us to believe that it's 98% of the population because they're always feeling the need to inflate their numbers. But do we have any way of knowing for sure what the exact percentage of heterosexuals is in our society?
We don't really know, Heather. It's always difficult on self-reports to find out exactly what people either have experienced in the past or are experienced at the moment, even sometimes, let alone in the future. And also it becomes difficult as to how to classify these particular people as well. We have a system of classification where we like neat little boxes to put people in, and that just doesn't always work. For example, someone who had a same-sex or an opposite-sex relationship in their childhood may be living with a same-sex partner in their adult life. So it's very difficult to define exactly what homosexual is or what heterosexual is in those sorts of surveys. There can also be some stigma attached to identifying oneself on such a survey, and some people are rather reluctant to do that.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Better?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That was excellent. Mm-hmm. So what about, you know, we hear that heterosexuals are constantly telling us that they can't choose to be gay, that they were born heterosexual, that's just the way they are, that it's not like they woke up in bed one morning and decided to be straight. So do we know for a fact that, in fact, heterosexuals are born that way, or is it environmental factors? Does it have to do with their parental relationships when they were growing up, sexual abuse?
It's most likely all of the above. We have no clear indication as to what causes heterosexuality. We really don't know what causes sexuality. It's probably 100% nature and 100% nurture. Genes become a popular excuse, blameless to all, as you know, an act of nature. But there's really no reason to blame anyone in the first place. And as I said, we don't really know what causes sexuality.
Mm-hmm. What about, so, I mean, is there any evidence that heterosexuals can successfully convert to homosexuals, or I guess I should say scientific evidence? Because, I mean, you know, here on the show we have people who come on and talk about having lived in the heterosexual lifestyle for, you know, many years sometimes. I mean, sometimes they got married and had children and did all of the typical sort of heterosexual lifestyle kinds of things, and then at a later point in their life realized that they'd been brainwashed by all of this propaganda that one finds in the school system and in popular culture, and realized that, in fact, you know, they were gay and that was for them, and they were able to come out of heterosexuality. So is there any evidence in the scientific field that this can be accomplished through therapy or medical intervention of some kind?
Again, no. Conversion therapies have fallen into disfavor in recent history. They're not recognized as being capable of affecting any long-lasting change. If someone is heterosexual, while they may experiment or, you know, try other things, something like that, if their emotion or their erotic attachments are intrinsically heterosexual, they'll probably remain heterosexual, and no amount of coercion will be able to change that.
Hmm. So now we know, for example, that through the studies of Dr. Evelyn Hooker back in the 50s, that heterosexuals have no psychological abnormalities that could cause them to be labeled mentally ill. But, I mean, is it simply not a matter of natural law that people align themselves with those with whom they share a common means of communication and a common understanding of each other's sexual pleasure. I mean, we've got study upon study that shows us that that men and women have completely different means of communicating with one another. We know that obviously a woman is going to have a much better understanding of the sexuality and that which gives pleasure to another woman than a man will. And we also know that whenever heterosexuals get together, you know, they engage in this breeding mechanism as a form of sexual pleasure, and inevitably, you know, spawn all sorts of sorry.
sorry. But I think you might be essentializing identities there, because there's nothing really to say that men and women are necessarily intrinsically different. There's a great deal of variation even within those particular categories. And, well, certainly, again, there are many examples in the animal kingdom of where that seems to be true. Human beings are capable of expressing a great deal of diversity. And I think the more important thing is that they're in a relationship in which they feel safe, secure, and loved.
Sorry, I'm starting to laugh now. I have to remember
what, more the way you want it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. I have to remember how I was going to end that last question before. So you know, they have they use this breeding mechanism as a means of sexual pleasure, and then of course inevitably they spawn all these offspring as a result. Okay, anyway, you don't have to answer that. That was just ending the last question for editing purposes so that I didn't have to start giggling on it.
Marriage is a breeding ground.
So what were you saying? Oh, yes, people have all sorts of diversity and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, getting back to this whole issue of using a breeding mechanism as a form of sexual pleasure, I mean, we've got heterosexuals having sex, producing offspring completely by accident. These offspring are going off into the world. Goodness knows what happens to them. They end up, you know, we hear about, you know, children of heterosexuals getting into heterosexual foster homes, being psychologically and sexually and physically abused. I mean, we hear these stories on television all the time and in the news. You know, are heterosexuals, should they be trusted as parents? Should we be allowing them to raise children?
Well, you know, personally, I was raised by straight parents, and, you know, I think I turned out fairly well. I even had straight siblings. Only one of my other siblings was queer. I think that there's ample evidence that heterosexuals are capable of raising children. They have managed to do it for many millennia now. Although there's invariably a queer uncle or an aunt somewhere in the background that's, you know, helping the family along.
You're rocking, man.
I need a beer.
This is hilarious. What about the security and the stability of heterosexual relationships? Because one of the things that really concerns me when I look at society is we've got these special laws in place in this country called marriage, which give heterosexual couples some 200 plus rights and privileges solely as an incentive to commit to living together in a stable and lasting partnership for the rest of their lives. And yet even couples who make this commitment to each other to live together and who receive all of these benefits end up breaking up 50% of the time. So, I mean, is there something about heterosexuality which makes their relationships inherently unstable?
Well, again, I think it's the establishment of some of the norms that we've spoken of already. You know, there are these essentialist identities that heterosexuals are supposed to maintain. The man who is not allowed to have any sort of emotional enjoy any sort of emotional displays, and women who are supposed to, you know, remain at home and be a happy little subservient homemaker. These are ideals that people obviously just are not comfortable with and cannot live with for any length of time. and perhaps it's more a reflection of the breakdown of these ideals that society has constructed than it is of the actual marriage per se.
So, in your opinion then, Quentin, would you say that, heterosexuals are capable of the same level of happiness and stability and intimacy that lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender couples are? Or do you feel that you know, if they could find it within them to come out of heterosexuality, that they would in fact be better off?
No, I think that for many heterosexuals, they are heterosexual, and they'll always they always will be heterosexual. I don't believe that you can just change their sexual orientation. The first part of that question was about the relationships.
Can they be happy?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do believe that they can be happy. Again, they just have to learn how to communicate better with one another, because there are some differences in some forms of communication. And if they can learn to communicate across those differences instead of using violence, like the bonobos using sex, they'll be much better off for it.
Excellent. Well, Quentin, thank you so much for...
All right, you're welcome.
Well, as long as you want to go on but we really only have one question, so just spend as long as you want answering it.
All right.
Okay.
So the shtick is basically we're talking to Barbara Finley, and Barbara Finley is a longtime lawyer and activist representing the families of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people, and as such, she is also a longtime observer of the heterosexual movement and an analyst of the heterosexual agenda. And in fact, Barbara, we understand that you yourself spent many years in the heterosexual lifestyle before coming out of it and living as an openly gay woman.
Oh, yes. I certainly had my share of being brainwashed by that evil and pernicious heterosexualist movement.
And you've obviously spent many years now as an advocate for the gay family movement, analyzing the heterosexual movement. In your opinion, what do you think are the key points of the heterosexual agenda that lesbian, gay, and bisexual and transgender families need to be aware of and watch out for?
Well, the first thing that people need to know is that the heterosexual agenda has at its heart a secret agenda. None of its activists will actually say this, but in fact, their secret agenda is to be normal like the rest of us. And this is the heart and soul of their movement. Now, this manifests in several different ways, as I can explain. First of all, the heterosexualists go about wanting to flaunt their sexuality. This is a danger to us, the normal North American people. They want to recruit, they even want to recruit our children. I don't know if you're aware, Heather, but they actually want the heterosexualist agenda to be taught in schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, if I'm not mistaken, they are actually quite successful at getting it taught in schools. Is that right?
Well, and indeed, this is one of the difficulties that we are encountering, is that the heterosexualists are absolutely everywhere. They claim to represent a majority of our population, but when you closely examine their statistics, what you will find is that they count as heterosexual any person who has even once slept with a person of the opposite sex. Well, with counting procedures like that, of course they're going to come up with inflated numbers. So the second thing to know about the heterosexualist agenda is that they want special rights. Listen to the terminology they use. Family allowance, spousal benefits. All of it really is an elaborate scheme for more money for them. They lobby, they agitate, for more money for their perverted and depraved lives. We know that though they claim to be normal and though they claim to have morals like queers do, that their claim to normality cannot be sustained. They want to exercise their depravity in every aspect of our lives. What we know, though, is that even though they're willing to inflict their sexual practices on unwilling partners, look at the rape statistics, we know that they are not normal, that they are the people responsible for most of the wife battery. They're responsible for most of the people who are charged with sexual abuse. They're responsible for most of the people who are charged with sexual assault. The fact of the matter is, statistics demonstrate conclusively that this lifestyle is one which any healthy, normal adult Canadian would avoid if they could.
Mm-hmm.
So frankly, Heather, you know, when it gets right down to it, I would have to say that the heterosexual agenda can be summed up in three words: sex, money, and power.
So when you just, I want to come back to this business of recruiting children for a second, because I think it's very important. And I think that a lot of lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgendered people have been held prisoner by the brainwashing for many years in their own lives. How do you see heterosexuals going about recruiting children?
Oh, Heather, it begins at the earliest age. I mean, it begins with parents trained to dress their babies in blue for boys and pink for girls, as if there were only two genders. I mean, the whole culture asks as its first question, is it a boy or is it a girl? What narrow-mindedness? It moves on from there. It moves on to the dominant ideology of our culture, which is essentially a Christian-based ideology, and the endless quotations from the wrong parts of the Bible. Moving along to the Ministry of Education sanctioned curricula, I was reading the IRP objectives the other day, and it specified that the goal of training in kindergarten through grade 3 was to teach children the difference between men and women, between male and female. Now, in terms of inculcating an ideology at the most basic level, you can't do better than that. Now, in terms of the perpetrating of the ideology of heterosexism, you only have to read the titles on the shelves. Everything children are given: Barbie dolls, Ken dolls, the segregation of toys by gender, the segregation of games by gender, the segregation of children by gender. It's a sad, sad state of affairs.
So what do you think that lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender family activists need to know to protect themselves heading into the new millennium from having our families undermined by this movement?
What are you asking me? The one sort of piece of wisdom that I might offer to our queer
Absolutely.
Families? I would say, really, it can be summed up like this: never believe a heterosexual.
way to go, Barbara.